Hello everyone, I'm John Noonan of Windows Azure Marketing. I'm excited you could all join us today for our discussion on enterprise cloud adoption. We're excited to have two great speakers today, Forrester Research VP and Principal Analyst James Staden, and our very own Windows Azure Technical Fellow, Mark Rusinovich. Today they'll be discussing some of the key benefits of cloud adoption and the ways in which enterprises are actually adopting the cloud. We'll start out with some slides from James, then Mark will share some perspective on how we think about meeting public cloud needs, and we'll finish up with 10 to 15 minutes of Q&A. And thanks again for joining. James, I'll hand it over to you.
Great, thanks so much, and thanks everyone for joining us here today. Before we get started on all this, we'd actually like to get a little audience interaction here. So we're going to send a poll to you out now. See if I can get that to work here. And we may have to ask the team here to push this out. We're going to send a poll out to you in a second here, so hopefully you'll receive that soon. What we'd like to do is get a sense for you about the key considerations that you have when it comes to cloud computing. Are you concerned mostly about the cost of cloud, managing the cost, application design so that you get the most efficiency out of the cloud from a cost perspective? That'd be the first choice. Second, what about the security? Are you concerned about the security? Are you able to get the security that you're looking for? What challenges do you have around that? Maybe the second choice. And third, hybrid. What's the challenges around integrating your cloud implementations with things that are on-premise, integrating them with other cloud-based applications? Give us your thoughts on that. We'd really appreciate it. I'll let that sit a little while you go through those choices there. All right. I think we may have given you enough time to respond. So let's go ahead and push the poll results out to you guys. All right. We should have the results out there now. All right, good. Mark, any comments on these?
About what I expected, actually. Pretty evenly spread across the board, though with a slight tilt in the hybrid cloud solutions, people concerned about connecting their on-premise to the public cloud. I'm sure that involves security as well.
Yep, absolutely. All right, good. Well, let's go ahead and get into some of the findings that we've had here at Forrester. And also get Mark's comments along the way as we get into things that have happened that you're seeing as well. I'm having some challenges, guys, with the tool, so I'm going to let you push the slides out for me. Let's go ahead and go past the title slide in slide two and jump right into the third slide, which should be titled The Bottom Line. So what is the bottom line for where we are with cloud adoption currently in the market? Well, first and foremost, majority of the cloud adoption that we see in the market is public cloud, as you might expect. Oftentimes, this is consumption of cloud services that have been bought and procured, not by central IT, but by the business on behalf of new, agile, flexible efforts that they're trying to deliver out into the market. Majority of the use of this has been through what you might heard called systems of engagement, applications, services, capabilities that engage customers and engage employees or engage other important audiences. Majority of it has been software as a service because it's very simple and easy for the business unit to procure those things themselves. But increasingly, we're seeing empowered developers who are being brought in by the business unit to build out custom capabilities. And a lot of times, these custom capabilities are brand new systems of engagement, but they fulfill other purposes and needs as well, which we'll get into in a little bit. One of the key things that's important to understand is that when you're developing for the cloud, it's not a brand new learning experience. You don't have to go back to school and relearn programming. A lot of the traditional languages and tools work perfectly for achieving this objective, and the applications that you're building, they're oftentimes the same style of application. but the architecture of the application you might want to consider doing differently. And we'll get into that as we get a little bit further here as well, because if you really want to activate the economics, you're going to want to consider doing something a little bit different here. Third is the most important thing to understand is that most of the implementations we see of public cloud services are already connecting to something inside the enterprise, meaning they're connecting to something that's not cloud, or they might be connecting to a private cloud, but more often than not, it's a linkage to a non-cloud resource. And the moment you have one of those, you're already hybrid. So this idea that you'll be hybrid in the future when you have your private cloud up and running, don't wait for that. It's time to start managing the use of cloud that you have currently. Let's move forward to the next slide, which is some poll results that we find coming out of managers in the application development area. And what they tell us is that the use of cloud is absolutely growing year over year. As you can see here, the respondents are saying they have between 4 and 7 SaaS applications, and we see that SaaS adoption has crossed over or is about to cross over the 50% line of all the respondents. That's actually pretty low from what we actually see, but what you're seeing here is the responses that are coming from someone in the IT organization who manages applications. The business reports a much higher adoption rate here. You see the same with infrastructure service and platform as service. You see an upward slope on both of these things. Infrastructure service being reported by 30% of these respondents, which we actually see it being a little bit higher in other surveys and other data sets. But the general trend is in place. What you notice here, this isn't a hockey stick, though. This is a growing adoption. So this still shows a little bit of hesitation and a little maturing going on by the organization to consume it. If we go down to the next slide, this actually comes out of our developer survey. And the most important and interesting thing about what you see in this particular slide is the 2015 estimates. So in the survey, we asked them, how much are you using cloud today? And of the server-side code that you write, how much of that is deployed into a cloud environment today? You would expect that to be relatively low, and that's what it shows under the current line. Less than 20% of our code is 40% of the respondents. Only up to 39% is 24% of respondents. But if you go down to the 2015 line, what you see here is the big 30% segment that I've called out here. That is 60 to 80% of all of our code. That's a big chunk of code moving out to the cloud. And that suggests very strongly that this is not going to be just steady linear adoption, but that there's going to be a little bit of a climb in that adoption curve. And that's exactly what we expect to see through, and we are seeing through our interviews with cloud developers. Once they get on the cloud, once they realize the power of it, the tools, the type of agility they gain, the ability to move really fast and not be hampered by some of the corporate challenges they've had internally, they start moving faster. Now let's look at what markets are really the ones that are using the most cloud. Now this is by no means an endorsement of any particular vertical market, nor is it a slap on the wrist of others who might be going slow. But according to our surveys, we find that manufacturers and business services companies are the ones who are being most aggressive in the use of cloud. Manufacturing is an interesting category because they're not typically an early adopter of new technology. But why we see them being more aggressive on cloud is because oftentimes manufacturers are manufacturing technology classes of products, but more importantly, adding technology elements to their products. So if you're familiar with things like Nike's FuelBand, you're probably very familiar with there's a big bit of software and ISV capabilities on the back end of that product. GE made a bunch of noise recently about talking about cloud enabling all of its medical equipment, all of its engines that go into the Boeing airplanes that you see in the skies today. It's a major trend in manufacturing to put more software capabilities and more sensor capabilities directly into those products, and clouds are ideal for doing that. Telecom we've seen be a big user of this for a while, and as we go down the list, there's a lot of other categories that are also starting to use this but may not be showing up as aggressively here. But there's a pretty broad adoption. Media and entertainment, financial services, a lot of other industries are really leveraging the cloud. So let's ask the question about which clouds are they using the most. And that shows up on the next slide here. What we find is that both Amazon and Windows Azure are the first choices for the cloud adoption that we see in the market today. Those are the most mature, most feature-rich cloud platforms, so it makes sense that they would be highly used. As you go a little bit further down the list, you see some other brands that are kind of interesting. They tend to have smaller niche plays or limited feature sets and capabilities, which is why they fall a little bit farther down behind the two leaders here in the market. Now, in terms of the use of cloud, why do they use cloud? It's often said, and you'll see this in a lot of people's surveys and certainly in a lot of material out there on the web, that the top reason people go to the cloud is to save money. They're attracted to the 5 cents per CPU hour. They're attracted to the fact they can scale it up and they only pay for what they use. That's true, and you see that reflected here in the third choice here. But notice that the first two choices are all about what is best suited to the type of app the developer is trying to build and what is the fastest way for me to get my job done. That is consistent in all the surveys we look at talking to developers about the use of cloud. They use it because it's fast, and they use it because their existing skill sets or the type of application they're trying to deploy, they find the services and capabilities in the cloud enable them to do that faster and more efficiently. So this is kind of an important thing for IT professionals to pay attention to. While you may be thinking, I'll adopt a certain cloud or I build a certain cloud on behalf of my developers, you have to satisfy their need for speed and the flexibility they're seeking before you worry about whether this is going to save you money. Now, will the cloud save you money in all cases? Not necessarily, but there's a good chance that it will. But your focus has to be on enabling the developers and enabling their agility. That's the most important part of this discussion. Now, if we look next at what type of applications they're putting out there in the cloud, I mentioned this at the very beginning. Certainly mobile applications are a natural fit here. Test and dev is a natural fit here. But notice what else is coming up here and coming up more prominently. Integrations with internal web applications, integrations with the corporate intranet, e-commerce. So we're seeing a lot of things that by default have to be hybrid. So that you're not going to put your entire corporate intranet up in the cloud. So obviously this is adding capabilities or adding features to the intranet, which have to, of course, synchronize with the intranet. And so you're going to see a significant amount of integration work, which really defines and expands the concept of hybrid. And it's very, very consistent in what we see in all of our survey data. Now, if we look at the languages, I mentioned before that if you have traditional skills in programming, that the cloud is suited for you. And we see that very much as you look here at this chart. Java is the most popular language being used out there. HTML and JavaScript you would expect to be very high on the list, but the other traditional languages are right there as well. C# is commonly used. C++ is still commonly used. So, and a whole bunch of other languages are in play. Well, so if you have traditional skills in the modern languages today, you can apply those to the cloud right away. You aren't going to have to learn a new language. Well, there are certain clouds in which you will, but not the main ones that we've been talking about here today. But your skills will transfer, which means that your applications will transfer as well. But we'll get into a talk a little bit later here about why your applications may not translate 100% as you've written them. But as for your skill sets, don't worry, you're prepared. And if you happen to work in a Microsoft shop that uses Team Foundation Server, that's a really good thing as well. If you look at the next slide, the survey data also shows that of the cloud developers that are out there, they're most commonly using Team Foundation Server as the deployment framework. We also looked at other questions about, you know, team management and other capabilities that Team Foundation Server has in comparison to open source tools, tools from IBM and other companies. And consistently, the Microsoft Team Foundation Server was in the top two or three choices in all of those categories. So again, if your team is skilled around using certain languages, certain frameworks, working as a team, the cloud is still suited to you. You aren't going to have to start over and learn from scratch. But let's again focus on the applications, because it's important you understand that an application that's currently running in your data center today should be adapted to the cloud, not just picked up and dropped onto the cloud, because you want to take advantage of cloud capabilities, you want to optimize for cloud value, and that actually takes some learning. So if you look at the next slide called Traditional Applications Struggle to Run on the Cloud, you can see a comparison between types of resources in a traditional enterprise data center that would be provided to the application, and therefore some assumptions we would make as developers when we're building those applications. Those assumptions don't hold when you go to cloud platforms. And this is particularly true when you go to infrastructure as a service, which is the most commonly used cloud platform capability. So where you might oftentimes build an application that, you know, kind of doesn't really take care of itself, it assumes it's going to be on highly available hardware, you're not so worried about achieving the SLA through the application because IT Ops is going to take advantage of that or take care of that for you, you can't make those assumptions safely in the cloud. In the cloud, you have to make some assumptions that say that application performance, SLA, availability, scalability, all are going to be assumptions the application has to address, either in its configuration, in how it's designed, in the componentization that you break the application down into. All of these are big factors that affect the performance of an application in the cloud. And one other thing you have to think about, too, is that when you put an application in the cloud, you don't control where in the cloud it is deployed. Now, that may be an obvious statement, but let's say that you have a complex multi-tier application and you really like all the executables to be put on either the same physical server or very close to each other. Very rarely do you have total control over that. And over time, as the application adapts to changes in the infrastructure, say if virtual machines stall out, if you add capabilities to them, if you deploy new instances through continuous delivery models, you're going to spread that application out in that corporate data center, in that cloud data center. And as a result, you're not going to have the close coupling that you may have started with. So it's really important that you're constantly paying attention to the design of the application, trying to reduce latency, trying to reduce chattiness between components of the application, and making sure that the application can recover from multiple fault types as you deploy it out. So that is a new learning, and that's something you'll have to pay attention to. Now, this is mostly a dev discussion we're having, but this is also a DevOps discussion because IT Ops needs to understand this concept as well. It's also really important that if you're going to operate and maintain and manage the applications, even if you're just going to monitor it, you have to understand not only this concept, but you have to understand the concept on the next slide, which we call the uneven handshake. This is a really important concept for everyone to understand in the cloud. When you're consuming services from the cloud, they're very different than through a managed service provider or a managed hoster or an outsourcer or your internal IT department. And the biggest difference is that there is a line of abstraction in the cloud platform you're consuming or the services within that cloud that you're consuming where the vendor takes responsibility for everything below that line of abstraction but no responsibility above that line of abstraction. So in the very basic sense of infrastructure as a service, that line of abstraction sits at the hypervisor for compute, sits at the storage service provided to you, and sits at the virtual network provided to you. That means it's the service provider's responsibility for how they provide and manage the virtual resources to you that I just described, but they take no responsibility for what you put in them. They take no responsibility for how you protect your application that lies on top of that. They take no responsibility for the performance of your application when it is getting consistent performance from the line of abstraction and below that they're responsible for. That means that if you want to put applications up there that have particular governance or compliance responsibilities, such as PCI DSS, meaning you have to take credit cards and handle and manage credit card numbers, the cloud itself, from the abstraction point down, may have PCI compliance. But when you put the application up there and you leave a port open or you allow the credit card database to talk to multiple systems, you're the one who violated PCI. And the cloud provider is not going to take any responsibility when you have to go in front of the board or your CFO or someone else about having broken the PCI rules. So this concept is really important. So as an application designer, you have to understand this. But your IT operations team or whoever's going to manage the performance, availability, and services of this, they need to understand this also. And this doesn't just apply to the application itself. It applies to those integrations. So if in the cloud you open up a hole that connects to your financial system back at the corporate headquarters, you got to protect that hole that you just opened up. You could definitely get yourself in trouble if you don't understand this concept clearly. Now, let me clarify something here that we've been talking about so far. I said that as a developer, your skills, both in languages and in the tools that you use and development style that you use, all apply here. I said that your applications need to be adapted a little bit to go here. So hopefully that means that you took away that I can't just pick up all my applications running in the data center and just move them over to the cloud. For the reasons I mentioned, that's true, but there's other reasons you're not going to do this as well. You're not going to do this as well because some applications can't activate the benefits of the cloud. They're just large, complex spaghetti code that you struggle to make run well inside your walls as it is. You put that on the cloud, it's going to struggle there too. You're not going to see an immediate gain from doing that. So rather than thinking about migrating applications to the cloud, we suggest another alternative, which is shown on the next slide. We recommend that you look at evolving your applications over to the cloud. And we've actually seen this movie before, because those of you that were here and working in the IT world when the dot-com era came about, we went through this same transition then. We took applications that really didn't have a web front end or couldn't really create their own web front end, call those things legacy here, as you see them on the chart, and we had to front end them with a web infrastructure. If you think about the old applications that were running on the mainframe that could really just sit on a green screen, we created green screen scraping tools that would allow us to pull the information out of the green screen and then repopulate it into an HTML front end so that you could have a web page interface. Well, that transition we're going to go through again with the cloud. So taking your legacy applications, even your applications that have a web infrastructure, but it's not one that was designed to scale elastically, that was not easily componentized, you're probably going to put a cloud front end around those applications as well. Certainly you're going to want to put a mobile UI there because the mobile backends of a service that exists on top of these clouds make mobile design and development very, very easy and very simple and rapid to maintain. And they help with the performance and the scale of a web application as well. But you're also going to want to do some SaaS integrations. If your company has SaaS applications and you want to connect them to these services up in the cloud, which makes a lot of sense so the traffic doesn't have to go down to your data center then back out to the cloud, you're going to want to do some SaaS integrations in this layer. And you absolutely are going to want to programmatically allow these services to be consumable by other cloud applications and other SaaS applications in your organization. And that means moving to more of a service-oriented architecture model, but a modern version of it, which focuses on RESTful APIs rather than SOAP calls. So that means you're going to want to be building out and putting RESTful interfaces on applications. So all of these modifications we're talking about are not things you're going to add to the core code of the legacy application and move it. These are things that you're going to want to enable in the cloud, where you take the legacy code and you don't change it. You may not even move it. You may leave it on-premise, but you'll front-end it with these unique capabilities that are up in the cloud. Now, anytime that you're going to do this kind of integration, you're going to want to consider caching as much content as you can to minimize traffic going back and forth between the legacy code and the front end. And over time, you're going to want to be able to take function off of that older application and modernize it. And as you increase that trend, you'll decrease the size and the importance of that legacy application, and over time, you may completely replace it entirely. So that's more the direction you want to go, but you're going to be hybrid with this type of model before you're going to be cloud native. Now let's also talk about another aspect of hybrid, because it's not just between something running in the cloud and something running in your data center. If you look at the next slide, the hybrid model is actually composed of a portfolio that your company's already been managing but is now expanding. So we'll start with the black, and we'll start on the side of the board here that says CapEx, because most often enterprises in particular have a physical data center that they are capitalizing the expense of. And everything that goes into that data center is part of that capitalization. Whether it's physically deployed, whether it's put onto a hypervisor and virtualized, or whether you choose to build out a private cloud, these are all capital investments, which means that if you're going to run it on-premise, you intend to run it for a long time, or you intend those services and resources to be there on a permanent basis. Because if you're going to CapEx it, that means that you're going to want to depreciate the cost of that over multiple years. For the most part, that means the applications, or at least the infrastructure below them, are going to be relatively static because you're going to own those assets. The value that comes from outsourcing has always been that I can transition some of my costs from CapEx to OpEx, but that has also been mostly static as well. If you look at the traditional outsourcing options, even if you look at most of the virtual hosting options that are out there, they're on a year or multi-year contract, which some companies can capitalize, but most companies don't. But they're not getting the benefit that the CFO really wants from outsourcing, which is a flexible OpEx, the ability for them to scale up the resources when the business is doing great and scale them down when the business is not doing so great. If you're in a traditional outsourcing contract right now, that's fixed terms for 3 to 5 years. I don't care how well your performance is doing as a company. There's a bill you're paying every single month. With virtual hosting, oftentimes you're not obligated for more than 12 months. And in those cases, hopefully you don't have big business cycles within that 12-month period. The public cloud is where you get the greatest economic benefits because you can take the bill to zero for any application, for any resource, when it's not in use. And you can scale those up, as you know, with additional resources when they get really, really busy. But managing this entire model is really where you want to get from a hybrid perspective. Each of these balls that you see here act differently. The types of applications that are best fit with them will match their cost structure. It will match the type of capability that they provide to you and how much you can customize it. That's why you see custom and common as one of the factors here. That's why you see fixed and transient, fixed resources, transient resources. I can turn them on or off whenever I want. You want to use these metrics or these scales below to help you make the right decision about where an application should be deployed. Because as you see on this chart, it's not one in which any one ball is larger than any other, because the size of each of these individual balls will vary from company to company. And you pretty much won't at any time in the next 5 years have zero in the public cloud or zero on-premise. You're probably for the long term going to have a mixture, and you have to manage and maintain that mixture over time. Now, as you add new applications to the mix, or as you evaluate migrating or transitioning an application from one of these balls to the next, you actually should go through a centralized decision tree knowing that there are all these options for deploying this app. Rather than look at all of your apps and say, let's move all of it to the cloud, go through the analysis. Can this application truly activate cloud economics? Can this application fit in the cloud and take care of its own performance and availability needs? If not, that may not be the best place for it. You may want to put it on-premise in traditional virtual on top of Hyper-V. You may want to put it into a private cloud if it can take advantage of some of that, but really isn't going to have the full benefits of a public cloud. It's not going to scale to thousands of instances. It's not going to need geographic reach. There may be reasons that you decide you want to put this application in a private cloud rather than put it in a public cloud. So you want that decision tree to look at the characteristics of the application along all the scales that you see below. Then what you want to do next is go back to what I reminded you of, that the developers love cloud because of speed. They don't love it because they can send a ticket to IT and wait 6 weeks to get resources. So if your decision tree and the decisions you make about where an application should be deployed always results in an increase in the time it takes to deploy the workload, you will be circumvented. The developers who say, well, the fast path to get my application done is the public cloud, and all the other paths are 6 to 8 weeks waiting for IT to decide if this is okay for me to do, you can guarantee what the outcome is going to be. So take everything that comes out of your decision tree and put it into an automation system that acts on those decisions to automatically deploy the application in the right location. This will help you speed everything up that lies below this decision tree. You want to constantly be working on doing these things below in a very standardized fashion and delivering them out as quickly as you can. Now, I know with the black balls, that's not always going to be the case. It may be 6 to 8 weeks before anything happens down there, but you want the decision to happen quick, and you want the assessment to be made correctly. That may also create opportunities in which someone by default thinks, well, this application is really performance-centric. It's got to have its own machine. Really? Does it really? Let's find out, because if you think you might be able to make it run virtualized on the public cloud, you can have it today. But if you really, really want your own machine, get in line, and we'll get to you when we can. That type of psychological behavior can absolutely help you tremendously in optimizing this model to move to the right model for your company and which applications go where. So in conclusion, let's just do some quick recommendations. When you're thinking about using the cloud, start out with some systems of engagement, things that are customer-facing that are probably under time pressure to get out there and be present. Your mobile application, improvements to your web, new promotions you want to do on the web, new capabilities and functions you want to add to your intranet, things you want to expose to your partners. Start there and start with applications that are relatively simple in design and relatively low in the SLA, so you can understand how these cloud environments really differ and what changes you would need to make in the application, how you monitor it, how you manage it, and so forth. Then spend some time looking at the bill, looking at how the bill is affected by the types of resources you deploy and how you manage them. Because while this may be cheap up front, you may be facing only a $25 bill in the first month. You want to avoid the shock bill, which almost every company goes through at some point in using the cloud, where they've just bought into, let it scale up, it's totally cheap, don't worry about it, keep it running, just go, 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 until that bill is $10,000 for 1 month. And then suddenly there's a complete change in focus. You'd rather not have that happen, because sometimes that complete change is stop using the public cloud, move it all back on-premise, which will defeat the purpose of using it to begin with. Then after you've got those first applications out there, start experimenting with some of the higher-level services the clouds provide, such as managing your database for you, providing a load balancing service to you, providing a CDN that you can leverage. There's a bunch of high-level services and capabilities you'll find in the most advanced clouds that can make your development and delivery of the next application significantly faster and easier, where you don't have to manage and maintain and build out everything yourself. Next, start moving to an agile model. If speed is what things are really about, going through your linear process model for developing things, where there's a train that applications have to get on in order to get delivered out in time, is not going to give you the fast response to a rapidly changing audience. What we've found in Forrester is that we have entered a new age around IT consumption, which we call the age of the customer, which means that the customer is now in charge of the interaction with you, not you in charge of the interaction that you give to the customer. And if you get the interaction wrong, the customer is not going to wait for you to fix it. They're going to go to your competitor. They're going to go to someone who delivers that value to them more rapidly and more suited to the context in which they want to do business with you, which means you need to spend a lot more time looking at and learning from your customer's interactions with you and adapting as quickly as you can. And that's where Agile is going to buy you the best advantage. If you can get to a continuous delivery model where you can get to the point where you're doing A-B testing with live applications so you know if new capabilities and features will improve the performance, that's going to give you significant benefit. It will also guide you down the path of componentizing your application, because if you want to make quick incremental changes, you don't want to do that where that quick incremental change could affect every other function within the application. Instead, you want to componentize these things so you can make a quick change here and it doesn't affect some other functions that would be exposed to the same customer base. All of this will help you develop best practices to really optimize how you use the cloud, how you optimize the cloud use, how you empower more developers and bring them on board. Then once you've got really good handle on how to use the cloud, that's the time to start looking back at the rest of your portfolio and saying, what can I move over here? What can really take advantage of this? Can we start evolving our applications and changing how they behave so we can get the greatest cloud value out of them? And how do we move to this sort of hybrid model that really allows us to have links going back and forth between cloud services, on-premise, SaaS applications, with nobody taking each other down or crashing somebody with all the traffic we're sending to them? You're going to want to really manage that hybrid environment in order to really get the benefits that come out of this. And then constantly be looking at your processes. there will be assumptions you'll make about the cloud today, which will be addressed by cloud services or changes in the cloud platform next year. And therefore, you can actually change your processes. It may be so simple as the availability of the instances is 99.5 right now, and next year it's 99.95. Do I need to spend as much time worrying about instances failing? Maybe I don't. Maybe I can make a change there. So you're going to see an evolution in the cloud solutions and services that are provided to you by the vendor community that will help you adapt your processes and get even more efficient over time. So the sooner you can get on this cloud journey, the sooner you can understand the differences and build out applications and gain experience, the more competitive advantage you'll have over the 50% or so of companies who haven't moved into the cloud yet. So now's your time to differentiate. Now's your time to get ahead. So with that, I'm going to wrap up all the straight-up conversations here. Mark, any comments or questions at this point that you want to throw in?
No, I thought that was a great coverage of the landscape, even as we see it as well.
Fantastic. Do we have any questions from the audience? Go ahead.
So, James, I would like to speak just a few minutes about Azure and specifically how we're addressing some of the things you talked about there, like the hybrid solutions and some of the technologies and features that we've introduced to enable customers to deploy hybrid in a secure way and get the agility that you were talking about. So I can spend a few minutes talking about that.
Great.
Before we turn it over to Q&A. So one of the things you talked about was IaaS and PaaS, and a lot of people on the call probably know that Azure started out as a pure PaaS platform, and that earlier this year we released a general availability and IaaS offering. This was in recognition of the fact that a lot of our customers are making the exact transitions you covered over the last half an hour, which is they've got existing assets on-premise, they wanted to bring them to the cloud. And even when we talk to customers and they realize the power of PaaS and the agility that you get out of a PaaS cloud kind of deployment model, that they wanted to leverage their existing technologies and they needed a place to deploy them. And that's what led us to create what we actually call an on-ramp, which is infrastructure as a service, the ability to very quickly deploy virtual machines that look exactly or very similar to the virtual machines that you'll deploy on your on-premises virtualized environments, creating Linux virtual machines, Windows virtual machines, and then being able to drop in the applications that you want to put in there fully basically under your control and supporting the standard server app type workloads like SQL and SharePoint. So we consider that, in some sense, a hybrid technology as people are shifting to the cloud. But one of the other related concerns when people talk about a hybrid is how do they securely connect their on-premises environments up into the cloud? Because, as you mentioned, a lot of times they've got data that's back on-premises, they've got the back end of their applications that they're on-premises, and they can't move them. They even if they want to, that's a huge amount of data and infrastructure and complexity that would be very difficult to move up into the cloud. So they're going to put the front ends or new applications up in the cloud first and then want them to connect back. So we've got and we've released over the last couple of years a number of hybrid networking technologies for secure on-premises to cloud connections. One of the first one was our point-to-site networking connection solution, which lets you create a VPN tunnel from an individual machine up into a Windows Azure application. So you could connect them to virtual machines or your PaaS application, and then the communications between that system and the applications inside this secure tunnel, even though it's going over the routed over the public internet, it's impervious to somebody sniffing the traffic or getting in the middle. But point-to-site is really a dev test kind of focused environment. It is an individual developer being able to create this autonomously without involving network operations. It's not suitable for really creating an application that's tightly integrated with the networking infrastructure and the applications that are back on premises. And for that, we've got site-to-site connection, which is the ability to connect a VPN device like a Cisco or Juniper or F5 VPN device, or even a routing and remote access services software VPN device that's on Windows Server 2012 up into the Windows Azure application. And that really makes the cloud and those applications that you put into that virtual network connected to that VPN device appear to be part of your network infrastructure. The latency's a little bit different, of course, because you're going up into the cloud and not just across your own data center. But otherwise, they appear as a site, and we see customers putting domain joined systems up in the cloud connected to domains that are back on premise. So they manage them as if they were on premises. They are collecting logs off them. They're applying group policy to them from on premises. They're using their deployment technologies to them as well. And our more sophisticated, larger enterprise customers, they actually want more performant connections to the cloud. So this site-to-site that I just talked about is still going over the public internet. A lot of enterprises have relationships with telcos like AT&T and others that are providing them high bandwidth connections between their own data centers through peering sites that are managed by those companies. And we've announced just a few months ago MPLS solution in partnership with AT&T, one of the first, you'll see more of those coming out, that let any AT&T customer that is using their region-to-region kind of connections be able to plug right into Windows Azure and provision a certain amount of bandwidth so that you can have SLAs around the performance and a good bandwidth connection between your enterprise and Azure. And then another aspect of hybrid networking related to security is if you are taking advantage of the public-facing IP address support that we've got in Windows Azure, so there's an application with an IP address, and you want to make sure that that's only being accessed from certain places, from your enterprise, for example, but it's not through one of these secure tunnels, it's more of an HTTP-based connection, you can apply ACLs to them, access control lists that say only certain subnets or IP ranges have access to those endpoints. And so that's another way that we give customers the ability to control that hybrid connection. And then there's a kind of different hybrid networking solution that we've got. It's called Service Bus, Windows Azure Service Bus. And this is an asynchronous messaging system, queuing system, that lets you, it's also secure, of course, because you can use SSL sockets to create these HTTP connections with the Service Bus endpoints. This is another way. It requires modifications to the application, so it's not just connecting existing infrastructure, existing server applications like you can with the solutions I just talked about, but creating new applications that are communicating in what we consider cloud design point practices, which over high latency and networks that aren't completely reliable, asynchronous messaging is the way to go, and that's where Service Bus and writing a new application to take advantage of that would work. James mentioned mobile applications as being a key aspect of the periphery around the cloud, and also Service Bus works great there. It supports mobile push notification hubs for all of the major platforms, including Windows Phone, and also supports topic subscriptions too. One of the key aspects as well when it comes to hybrid that we hear our customers talking about is wanting to leverage their on-premises identities. Azure Active Directory is deployed in almost all of the enterprises that we talk to. And when they put their applications up in the cloud, they want to use they want their own end users to be able to leverage their corporate identities as they authenticate to those applications, including our SaaS applications like Office 365. So Windows Azure Active Directory is first-class federation services with on-premises Active Directory. And it even includes a feature called Directory Sync, which lets you automatically migrate those identities up into Windows Azure Active Directory. So people can authenticate to SaaS applications that are integrated with Azure Active Directory without hitting your on-premises domain controllers. And Password Sync lets those passwords move up so that your passwords, whether your users have them on-premise, those same passwords they can use as they authenticate to these SaaS applications up in the cloud. And we find that that's a great enabler for them so that they're not managing multiple identity systems. It's really just one. And another kind of different bent on the hybrid is customers that want to be able to leverage technologies that on-premises that they can then later leverage in the cloud. Instead of looking at it as the old world and the new world, let's just move to the new world. And so we're focused on providing consistent technologies across Windows Server and Windows Azure. One of the examples of that people probably have seen is the Windows Azure Pack, which lets people deploy a management experience to on-premise that looks very much like what they'll experience in Windows Azure. And hosters can deploy this in multi-tenant environment. You can also deploy it in your private clouds. And some of the features in there that have a consistent management and provisioning experience include Windows Azure websites, Service Bus, like I mentioned. So if you want a private deployment of Service Bus technologies, you can use that. You can do that through Azure Pack. Virtual machines, the virtual machine management, if you're going with the Windows Azure Pack on-premise, would be through Windows Server System Center. And if you're up in the cloud, it would be Windows Azure, of course, virtual machine. So there are some differences there, and actually we're working really closely with the Windows Server team to get more consistent when it comes to virtual machines and including PaaS. You're going to see consistency in PaaS from on-premise, enabling you to write applications that are the new cloud design point that you'll later be able to move back and forth. And finally, when it comes to hybrid technologies and people moving, the enterprise moving to the cloud, one of the survey that we had at the very beginning, 30% of the respondents said that security was a key consideration. And James mentioned how security partly is still in the hands of the customer. You still have to make sure your firewalls are closed or are up and you don't have the wrong ports open to let people get into your application as it's sitting up in the cloud. But another part is the provider's responsibility. In this case, it'd be Windows Azure. So one of the ways that we get enterprises comfortable with thinking of moving workloads to the cloud, including sensitive information, is not by necessarily inviting them in and showing them our infrastructure and showing them our software and the controls that we put in place in our operations, because that just doesn't scale. But we've got third-party auditors that come in, and they've got a set of controls that our customers understand. They attest to the fact that we're following those controls, and that gives our customers confidence that their data is going to be secure when they place it in us. And if you go to the Windows Azure Trust Center, you'll see the certifications that we've currently got. We're currently working on new ones, and there'll be new certifications coming out, I'm sure, that we'll go after. But the list that we've got today already is a fairly good list of, in terms of coverage that our customers are interested in, including ISO 27001, SSE 16, SOC 1 and 2, FedRAMP, the Cloud Security Alliance, Controls Matrix, and even HIPAA. And I'll just close here with just talking for a couple minutes about some of the movements that we've seen from enterprises, different patterns that we've seen. James touched on these, and we've got examples of them, like dev test, customers that start by dipping their toes in the cloud, and they view it as a really agile way to set up development environments without having to go to IT and provision physical machines and make the virtual machines and put the operating systems on them and get them all ready to go. They simply create the dev test environment literally in a matter of minutes. They can get virtual machines up and have software installed in them and start to play and get their environment and their application working, and then later bring it back to on-premise. One of the companies we see doing that is Telenor. Telenor stands up SharePoint sites, and they do that in a matter of a couple days. They get a new SharePoint site set up in Windows Azure. They configure it there, test it, and then make sure it's working properly, and then they bring that back to on-premise. So that Azure's become their dev test lab, basically, their dev test data center for their on-premises workloads. We also see lift and shift is what we call it, when an enterprise just takes an existing application, and because they want to get it to take it, be able to take advantage of the scalability and even reliability. A lot of our customers tell us that the reliability that we're providing Windows Azure exceeds what they provide in their own data centers. And a company is Trek Bicycle. A lot of people probably familiar with Trek. They've moved their whole retail management operation up into Windows Azure. And this is an example of where they're starting with infrastructure as a service, as a lift and shift. They just took the whole application and moved it, but their long-term plan is to move it to platform as a service. So they've already started working on the migration of that retail application to platform as a service because they see the benefits that that will give them. But they're already getting immediate benefits just by being in the cloud. And then new application work, this is where an enterprise will start just by, when they've got a new application, putting it right in the cloud right away, again for the agility and also for the reach. In some cases, it's easier if you've got a multinational company to start something new in the cloud and connect their various locations up to that cloud application rather than place it in one of the regions and then have to worry about the issues around ACLs and federation and so on from a particular region. An example of that is HarperCollins that wanted to create a business intelligence application for their internal use, so this wasn't for public consumption, but just for their various locations around the world, and they decided, for the reasons that I just mentioned, let's just go to the cloud right away. And just driving home the point James was making about agility and the fact that it's really agility, not cost, that's driving people up into the cloud. They literally got their BI app, It was an infrastructure as a service app based on SQL reporting services and SharePoint. They got it up from the moment they started working on it up into the cloud and had their customers, their internal customers around the world using it in literally 2 weeks. So that was a great success story from them. So that's just a quick overview of some of the ways that with Windows Azure, help our customers with hybrid technologies and connections to get their applications up into the cloud and enable those different kinds of patterns that we're seeing. And I think at this point, we've got a few minutes left for some live questions. So I'll turn it back to you, James, to manage those.
Yeah, James, Mark, thank you both. So we've had just a few questions here that we'll go ahead and speak to. So the first is around PaaS connections with on-premise. So Mark, James, if you can just maybe speak a little bit to how PaaS can connect with one's on-premises IT assets and just any ways that the hybrid story is different for PaaS as opposed to IaaS.
So James, I'll go ahead and address that one first because I just came off talking about some of those things. When it comes to platform as a service, I'm assuming this means that non-VPN type connections, because those are more infrastructure as a service. And VPN connections, the point-to-site, site-to-site, and MPLS and that I mentioned, they work with whether it's an IaaS application or a PaaS application. So I think when I hear PaaS connections with on-premise, PaaS meaning some you're using some service that the application is taking advantage of, more of a cloud design point. Like I mentioned, Service Bus is Azure's answer there. Also, Windows Azure Queuing is another answer there, but Service Bus really has it's more feature-rich. Like I mentioned, it has topic subscriptions and the push notifications for mobile applications, but that would be what I was would be referring to from an Azure PaaS perspective. Of course, the downside of PaaS, if you want to view it that way, is that you got to write the app to integrate with it, you know, versus just taking off the shelf server app and it just works.
Yeah, I think what I would add there is whether you're starting in PaaS, starting in a abstracted service, or whether you're starting an infrastructure service, you can't assume that the connection is secure, so you have to secure it. And this could be multiple ways. You could be going over the VPN connection that you set up. You could be on a private network like MPLS, but you could still route traffic over the internet because you wrote it incorrectly, or you called a service that didn't go over that connection. So it's really important that you pay attention to all these connection points and how you connect, and you do it in the proper way.
Great. So for our next question, we have a couple of questions around just hybrid use cases, one of which is, you know, if I'm a new company, are there still reasons for me to consider a hybrid environment as opposed to just going full into public cloud?
James, you want to take that one first?
Yeah, it depends really on the applications that you're planning on building. There's really nothing that the cloud provides that you would not be able to leverage for in any company. But you may have particular reasons why you want something to be on-premise. You may have particular reasons why you want everything to be in a certain country, for example. So we're running into this with certain European countries and Asian countries, where they need a certain set of data, such as person identifiable information, to be on-premise. And Microsoft has a solution for this called Store Simple, which can help with that. But you know, we see a lot of startups, we see a lot of small companies that are starting 100% in the cloud, and some stay that way, or have so far.
Yeah, I think that's what we're seeing too. I actually believe that as this shift to the cloud accelerates, that you'll see more and more businesses born that will never buy a server.
So I think we probably have time for just one more here. So are companies really investing in upgrading their on-premise infrastructure, or are they looking for someone else, e.g. a hoster, to set up private cloud?
That's a great question, and it really depends on how much your internal IT department feels comfortable with the cloud or feels a threat from the cloud. So this is really more psychological than it is due to the tools or anything like that. We actually find that most organizations who try to build their own private cloud have a lower success rate than those companies who go to a hoster or go to an outsourcer and ask for a hosted private cloud solution. And we see a significantly higher success rate beyond that for those people who set up a virtual private cloud on a public cloud. And this really does come down to what I said. It comes down to the culture of your IT department. If you're going to do a private cloud, it better be self-service. You better deploy the resources in 15 minutes or less. There better be some way for you to track the use of those resources and incent the proper use of them, as well as disincent people parking workloads there. Because if one of the key things that's important about cloud economics, why you see an hourly rate, is to remind you that it's still running. And if it doesn't need to be still running, why are you paying for it? And inside of corporations in our private clouds, it's very common for people to have never learned that, never been exposed to that, and just park things. So there's various things that have to change in your organization's culture to really make private cloud effective. And you don't run into those issues on a hosted private cloud, and you definitely don't run into them on a virtual private cloud.
Yeah, I think that was a great comprehensive answer, James. I agree with you that it's mostly culture and it's mostly comfort with what you've got going on and where your center of gravity is at this point in time. There's lots of companies that we still talk to that hear about the cloud, but they haven't done anything with the cloud yet. So they're continuing on their current course. If they've got an on-premises in their own data center infrastructure, that's still what they're going to be building out versus some companies that literally have come and told us, we're not building another data center. They might have a whole bunch, but they've decided they're getting out of the data center business and moving right up into the public cloud, and they'll start from that end of the spectrum.
Great. Well, I think we're just at the top of the hour here. So Mark, James, thank you both for discussing enterprise cloud adoption today. And to everyone dialed in, we really are glad you could join us, and we'll be sure to make these contents available for later consumption to all of you.